This is the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley.
Look, we're going to shake things up.
On Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
I don't think we're asking the right question. I think the question we should be asking is, do you believe in this thing or not?
The Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley.
What do you mean? Of course martial arts training is relevant.
Now your hosts.
Let me save you some time. Get comfortable.
WSBT Radio's Sean Steyer.
Let's get started.
And former Irish quarterback, Evan Sharpley.
Hey, stay sharp.
Glad to have you with us on another Friday at Five Star Dive Bar, downtown Elkhart, 526 South Main Street in the former State Theater. It is another cold day outside, but a great day to be inside at Five Star. And Evan has already wolfed down a cup of, what was that, French onion soup?
It was, yeah. And then we have the Philly grilled cheese with fries for $7, too.
Which looks nice. A couple big pieces of Texas toast with a, it's basically a Philly cheesesteak turned into a grilled cheese.
Can you hear the fries here? I'm eating too. They're pretty good.
I can hear the fries. And everything sounds good, smells good, looks good. And stop on by. Comedy tonight, as always.
That's right. Michael McDaniel tonight. Comedy Club, 7 p.m. dinner. And then the show starts at 8 p.m. And then we have the Incredible Johnsons at 10 p.m., probably on this stage right here that we're warming up.
Right where we're sitting. That's right. Getting it ready for them. And then more live music tomorrow night at 10 o'clock as well.
Mm-hmm. Always.
That's right. Well, we've got we're kind of in that in-between period right now.
There's not a whole lot of exciting things going on, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
football just kind of ended.
And we're actually...
Baseball's about to start.
We're about 2 weeks from the start of spring football practice, I think. We haven't got an official start date for spring
practice.
We're
waiting on Michael Birch here to release that.
You said it, not me.
Come on, Mike. Let's go. We need that.
We're waiting for that to find out when the Brian Kelly press conference will be, the first practice and all that kind of stuff as we get into that. And we'll talk a little bit about that. We've got Notre Dame men's basketball coming up tomorrow at 2 o'clock as the season heads into the stretch drive. The Fighting Irish men picked up a much-needed win last weekend over Georgia Tech. And T.J. Gibbs, finally, in the second half,
he must have read Tom Noe's article.
To go to. You think?
Must have.
I know he retweeted it and had a comment, and it wasn't a snarky comment. It was basically like, I'm going to get it going. It's a matter of time. And apparently Mike Bray had a conversation with, not just a conversation, but they got together, went down to the pit, did some shooting together.
Tom was down there 45%. I told
That's
you.
Right.
We talked about it last week. I'm
That's
not
right.
wrong.
Tom Noy says his three-point percentage is 45%. Maybe. I don't know.
Career? Pretty good.
Yeah, it's not too bad. TJ got it going, though. And speaking of the men, this came out yesterday. The ACC released its schedule for the next few years. Notre Dame's conference opponents for next season and essentially the next 3 years. Currently, the ACC conference schedule is 18 games. That's what it's been since Notre Dame has joined the conference. But beginning next year, they're going to expand to 20 games. So first of all, what do you think about that? 20 conference games.
Oh, man.
Every team's going to play in ACC.
It's tough in this conference. Oh, baby.
It is. I mean, it's the ACC. There's no two ways around it. So you're going to give up, you know, you might give up a cupcake, but you might also give up one of the marquee games because something Mike Bray has talked about within the last year when he was saying that the ACC was telling teams to be ready to expand to 20 is they're even talking about opening up the season opener to kind of generate some buzz against a conference opponent.
That'd be pretty cool, though.
You like that?
I don't mind it.
See, I've never been in favor of, you know, like the NFL, obviously fewer games, but you've got 16 games.
Ease into it here or what?
I would rather, because since conference games obviously count more than just a non-conference game, just like in the NFL
out
with
first,
division.
Is what
yeah,
you're saying.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's why conference play usually starts in late December or January, because teams are a lot different at that point than they are in mid-November.
Let's dial it up right away. Let's go.
You like it.
Yeah, why not?
Right out of the chute.
Yeah.
You think it's good for the conference to do that?
Well, I think from, you know, a player development standpoint, and if you're looking at also, too, running a program, you got to be ready to go game one. You know, you're not able to take some nights off or figure out what your rhythm is going to be, you got to do that in the offseason.
I think for this Notre Dame team specifically, because the only bright side to everything that's going on with this team right now is you get everybody back next year.
Yeah.
Plus you add Rex Pfluger back into the mix, so you've got that edge, that, you know, that leadership, whatever. We talked about the edge last week. What you add some of that stuff back into the mix. So from a Notre Dame perspective, with all this inexperience that they've had this year and getting things figured out, if you're going into next season, I don't think you would mind opening up the season against a conference opponent potentially, because you've got everybody back. There's fewer things essentially that you've got to solve.
It probably depends who you're playing, too.
Well, I mean, of course.
If you're playing one of the top dogs, you're like, nah, I don't want to do this.
Don't want to play Duke right out of the gate.
Probably not. Although they may have a completely new lineup by next year, too. So who knows?
Yeah, but I mean, when you have three of the top four freshmen in the country in your class who have all played well, and I think it's four of the top 15 in what was this recruiting class coming in, they've obviously figured things out pretty quickly.
It's not too bad.
Yeah, no matter how much it costs to get it. hey.
Wait, what's tuition at Notre Dame?
Yeah, that's right. So here's Boston College and Georgia Tech. The way they set this up, each team plays what the ACC calls their two rivals, and then you have four repeat opponents as well, and then you have a home-only schedule and a road-only schedule. So Notre Dame's two quote-unquote rivals in the ACC are Boston College and Georgia Tech.
Why? Why are they the rivals?
Well,
what is this based on?
I can see Boston College, even though, you know, from a Notre Dame standpoint, I don't know.
I saw a few shirts when I was at Notre Dame with the Boston College logo on there. It said backup college, though.
That's right.
I think Golden Tate wore those pretty proudly. He was a big fan of those shirts.
Does Pittsburgh make sense more as a rival? I mean, there aren't too many. There obviously aren't any natural rivals for Notre Dame beyond Boston College. It's the most natural fit. North Carolina. North Carolina is going to play Duke and Wake Forest, I believe it is.
Okay.
You know, no, actually, North Carolina, well, I'll find it here in a second. But in any case, from a Notre Dame standpoint, the other repeat opponents are Florida State, North Carolina, Syracuse, and Wake Forest. Home only, it's Louisville, Miami, Pittsburgh, Virginia Tech. I mean, you could make an argument that going back to Notre Dame's days in the Big East, that Louisville is as much of a rival as anybody, but didn't pair them up. Road only: Clemson, Duke, North Carolina State, and Virginia. So that's what it's going to look like over for next year, anyway. When the conference schedule expands to 20, and all those other schools in
there. You know, Notre Dame men's basketball is having a good season when we're talking about next year.
Well, I mean, what else? Unfortunately, that's what it is.
I know.
But you know what? What could, because of this expanding to 20 conference games, you could lose the Crossroads Classic, where you're alternating every other year against Indiana and Purdue.
It'd be sad to see that go.
I would, too.
I like that.
I think it's been a pretty good event, but the Big Ten is going to be expanding its conference slate as well. And, again, that's something Mike Bray has talked about, that something might have to give.
Mm-hmm.
So, unfortunately, that could be it. We've got a lot of we got some baseball we're going to talk about today, by the way.
We're almost there.
We talked some baseball last week. We got some football we're going to get to in a little bit. Notre Dame women trounced Boston College. Speaking of Boston College, they trounced them 97-47 Wednesday to improve to 20-3 overall, 10-2 in the ACC, and they are at NC State next Monday. All five starters in double figures, led by Arike Ogunbowale with 23 for the Irish the other day. And then all five starters are also on the Naismith Midseason Award team. Did you see that?
Seems like an embarrassment of riches right there with that.
I mean, it's not too bad. Arike is averaging 21 points and 4 assists. Marina Mabry averaging 14.3 points and shooting 46% on her three-pointers. Jackie Young averaging 14.4 and 4.5 assists. Jessica Shepherd, who is one of the top power forward in the nation award candidates, she's averaging almost a double-double, a little over 15.5 points and 9.7 rebounds, and then Brianna Turner, 13.1 points and 7.4 boards.
Do you think one of them could be a spot-up shooter on the men's team?
I mean, they could use one right now, couldn't they?
Yeah.
That's really, and when you look at this young class, this freshman class, and now see, I just said the key word because I always get on Kirk Herbstreit because I always hear him say the young freshman, which to me is pretty much redundant. But I mean,
yes,
when you look at this
freshman, you are young.
When you look at this freshman class that they've had, one of these guys is supposed to be that spot up type guy, the Beecham, Vistoria, whatever, to help complement TJ Gibbs. But at the same time, I do, you know, what we've kind of hit this before. You can't put it all just on the freshmen. Mm-hmm. The upperclassmen have to produce. Mooney has produced. TJ Gibbs in the second half finally showed a spark of what we've seen in the past before. He's got to be able to do his thing. But one of those guys, I mean, they're top 100 guys as well. They were brought in to shoot and hit some three-pointers. They just haven't done it consistently so far.
Yeah, well, let's see how this final month goes as we get into tournament time, and hopefully they start to blossom. You know, it's like any sport. You know, you're a younger guy. It's going to take some time as far as development and getting acclimated to, you know, playing in college and being around this environment. But, you know, it's been a tough season. I think that's why we're probably talking a little bit about, you know, what the future holds. And there are a lot of young guys, some good talent that's on this basketball team. But, you know, they're going to have some opportunities here as we move into March to at least take some positive steps forward.
Yep. February Madness is going to be starting here pretty soon.
What's
in
that?
Indiana. Well, I just kind of made that
up. That's a new thing?
Sectional start in
that
a couple
right.
of weeks, and the sectional draw is Sunday at 5 o'clock, so we'll find out who's playing who and,
do you have a favorite?
And all that kind of stuff. Well, I mean, how could I have a favorite? if I was going to look, Penn is hosting a sectional this year, and it's the one that's got Penn, Mishawaka, LaPorte, South Bend Adams, South Bend Riley. I feel like I'm leaving somebody else out.
I don't know.
Did I say
You're
Mishawaka? But
yeah,
in any case, so they're
same
all going to be
twice.
Out there. Yeah, I mean, really, Penn.
They're playing well.
They're the favorite to win that sectional. I think Riley's got to be right in there. But yeah, you've got some other Clay. Clay is going to be there as well. I mean, Adams, if they get hot just like they did a couple of years ago, they could be in there. But the draw will come out on Sunday, and we'll.
Are you hosting a selection show?
I am not. It is at IHSAA.tv.
Okay.
I believe. So if you go to their website, follow the link starting 5 o'clock Sunday. Tomorrow, Oregon Donor Classic at Mishawaka at 5 o'clock. South Bend Adams plays Indianapolis Cecina. And then at 7 o'clock tomorrow night, it's Mishawaka against Lakeland. And, of course, we'll have that game here on WSBT.
Do you have both those calls?
No, just the second game.
Okay, I'm glad. We were going to save your voice. That's good.
Yeah, that's right.
All right.
Well, Vince was sick the other night. And
how are your vocal cords doing?
And yesterday I was feeling kind of
a little extra
overnight,
honey, some
yeah.
honey. Yeah, okay.
I've never gone with the honey, more just the Vicks, heavy on the Vicks, and
I did
open
honey
it all
before
up.
Some football games. Brady Quinn was big on that too. He'd always have a jar of honey.
The energy?
Yeah, a little bit of quick sugar, and then it's supposed to coat the vocal cords.
No, just so you can when you're barking signals out there
yeah.
and all that kind of good stuff.
Yeah.
Never thought about that.
Yeah.
Interesting. No hot tea or anything like that?
There was no hot tea, just honey. You probably could do some hot tea with honey.
That's true. That is very true. The Oregon Donation Classic, though, tomorrow at Mishawaka, it came about as the brainchild of Ron Hicklinski, the caveman head coach, who was himself a organ donor, a liver transplant recipient 20-plus years ago. And so the whole thing is about awareness of organ donation. The Organ Donor Network is going to be out there. You can come out. Get some education. You can make donations. $1 from every ticket sold is going to go to the Organ Donor Network. And you can also register to be an organ donor if you are not already. So that is going on tomorrow at Mishawaka. And I know they're going to have some elementary games going on throughout the day
cool.
as well as part of their elementary playoffs and that kind of stuff.
Tom Noy and I are going one-on-one in a three-point contest, too. Is that true?
I'd pay to see that.
All right.
I would donate some money to the Organ Donor Network.
Let's put
it that way.
Let's put that out there on the sphere right now.
Get
out,
it going?
Out on the net. Let's try to get that going.
Three-point challenge?
Yeah.
Okay. I would do that. Pick a charity. We'll get it in the works. Also, something that I wanted to bounce off you here today. The National Federation of State High School Associations has approved a rule that's going to let states use instant replay for postseason games. So do you buy or sell that? What do you think about that? Instant replay for high school state playoff games.
I didn't realize that they have access to a replay?
Well, state championship games do because they're all on TV. Yeah, once you get below, and I think
so this is for all postseason, so it started in sectionals.
If a state wants to use it.
Interesting.
But they, obviously the games would have to be on TV. You're not just going to have internet replay, I don't think.
And this is for all sports?
For football.
Football only.
Yeah.
I like it. I think, I mean, it makes sense. College and pro teams and programs are doing it, so why not in high school?
The problem I have with it is I know you want to get it right, and I think it would mostly be used at state championship games because, again, once you get below that level, it's going to be hit or miss in terms of
the
what
quality.
Kind of TV you have. But even, you know, like right now, NFL, college, whatever, you're talking 20 to 30 cameras per game. And
that's it? Just 20 to 30?
I think.
How do you miss anything?
They still do, and that's my point. And at a high school game, you're probably going to have 10 to 15 max.
I would say the under on that.
So I would think that you're going to spend more time looking for something to help you determine it, but you're not going to have any
conclusive.
It's not going to be as conclusive or definitive because your camera angles aren't going to be as good for a high school game.
Yeah.
I think you're asking for more trouble.
You think more trouble?
I think so.
Yeah, I would be interested to see what states and who would go after that. But ultimately, I think with kind of the climate on how things are going within both the college and the pro game, I'm not surprised that this is a topic at the high school level, at least in the postseason.
Yeah, last year, and I don't know if last year was the first time, but like the ACC, for example, ACC baseball, they have replay challenges. Hmm. And
is that within league games or just postseason?
Yeah, just for conference games.
Okay.
But you can essentially go back and you know, challenge fair or foul just like you can in a pro game or whatever. And again, you're...
You mean they don't have sensors set up yet where they know the ball's in her?
You know what's interesting? You know, when you say that, what's interesting is like for any sport, like tennis does it, right? Why doesn't the NFL or baseball or these other sports, why don't they have more technology on the field to help with those boundary calls?
I'm just waiting for the day when there's not an umpire behind the plate calling balls and strikes. I think it's coming.
I think you're right.
Here's the parameters. You know where a ball is, where a strike is. It's no longer determined by a human being.
Yeah. I think it could very well happen. I don't...
You're going to have somebody on the bases, though.
I think that the Players Association is going to have a hard time with it.
I think they'd like it. I think the players would like it because I think they would be able to have a little bit of feedback on, well, let's make sure that we're determining what this strike zone is. We're setting it from here to here. How do you argue with a computer then?
No, exactly.
Sorry about it. You're out.
Maybe the players would like it more. I mean, obviously the umpires aren't going to like
it. No, because there's
because
not
it's going to put them out of a job eventually. But I don't know how many people are going to be crying about that. So, all right, Brian Kelly got some social media buzz this week. Did you hear about this?
I did.
At the hockey game the other night? So he's at the Notre Dame-Michigan hockey game with the Irish leading 2-0. And it's an in-house interview. One of the people from Fighting Irish Media, I guess, was over there and sat down and they've got him on camera, and they put him up on the Jumbotron and the whole thing, the video screen, whatever you want to call it, in there. And so Notre Dame's leading Michigan 2-0, and Kelly says, quote, just like in football, halfway through the game, Michigan hasn't scored. And then he added, Michigan should stick to football. So what do you think about it?
Love it. Now you just got to back it up on the field, though.
That's because now you got to go to Ann Arbor. In late October.
Talk is cheap, but as long as you can take care of business, I think it's fun. Why not?
And I mean, I think that just like with the stuff from a few weeks back with the Cubs and Bryant and Dempster and the stuff that they said about St. Louis, I mean, they're essentially talking to their own fan base, right? And that's what Kelly is doing. You're talking to your own fan base, and you're just kind of having fun, and you're playing with it, and I don't think there's anything much more than that to it.
Yeah, but Michigan, they can tack it up there. That's fine. It's good for the rivalry. It's fun.
They like to talk, though,
talk,
right?
Yeah, talk more.
Do you think we'll see that? Do you think when Notre Dame goes up there?
Well, if Michigan wins, you know, something will be said. Of course something just, will be said.
Were you there that year when they were playing the chicken dance?
Absolutely.
With Denard Robinson when he was wearing, what was it, 98 or whatever it was?
I'm okay with all that stuff.
They were playing the chicken dance at the end of the game because that was the last time they played until just last year because
Notre Dame. I was at the game.
Yeah.
It's all fun. It's all fun stuff.
All right.
I'm a big fan of trash talking.
All right. We'll take a timeout when we come back. We've got, you know what? Let's do this one first. Speaking of Michigan, Jim Harbaugh says it's time for a Tom Brady statue.
Put it up.
Sign it up?
Yeah, put one. The Patriots need one, too. and Belichick right by each other.
I think he and Belichick will be holding hands in their statue outside Gillette Stadium. But, I mean, for Michigan, Darren brought this up the other day when we talked about it. Should, if you're going to put a statue of a guy up at a school, at a college, should it be based on what he did for his accomplishments at that school, or does it matter?
They're very proud of what he's done.
I would be.
I would be, too. I mean, I understand, I think, the commentary from Darren on, you know, his career at Michigan certainly isn't a Hall of Fame career that he's had in the pros. But he's still a Michigan guy.
Well,
you know, it wasn't like he transferred and went somewhere else and split his time. You know, he was a Michigan man through and through, and then, you know, went on to some great success in the NFL. So, yeah, why not put a statue up? Who cares?
Yeah, I think that when you're the kids that Michigan is recruiting right now, and Jim Harbaugh, he hasn't recruited quarterbacks very well in his 4 years there at Michigan. So now, when Brady was playing at Michigan, it was, 98, 99 were his last 2 years, I think it was. So none of the kids that Jim Harbaugh is recruiting now were even born back then. So they don't know how good or bad Brady was. All they know is he's won 6 Super Bowls. And as they've grown up in this century, he's been out there winning Super Bowls. So I say put the statue up. I mean, it's...
And just point at him and say, if you want to win Super Bowls, come here.
That's exactly it. Why is there no Joe Montana?
I don't know. Why isn't there an Evan Sharpley statue? Well, no, we know why there's no Evan Sharpley statue.
Which stadium? Notre Dame Stadium or X Stadium?
Oh, okay.
You pounded a few home runs over there, Dak.
We'll just put it over on the South Quad. How about that?
All right. Sounds good. All right, so speaking of college baseball and Notre Dame baseball, we've got a lot of baseball talk to come. This is college baseball's opening weekend, so we'll hit some of that coming up next. And we've got a lot more to cover, including some more football talk as we continue. Sean and Sharpley at Five Star Dive Bar in downtown Elkhart, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Dive Bar downtown Elkhart, 526 South Main Street. Sean and Sharpley in the Leprechaun Lunch. A Philly cheesesteak grilled cheese sandwich and fries is the lunch special today for just $7. Your verdict?
It's great.
It smells good.
I just had 3 bites of it.
That's right. Going at it in between the break. And what, remind us, Mr. Sharpley,
Michael
the
McDaniel,
live acts.
Tonight, the comedy show. Dinner's at 7 p.m. The show's at 8 p.m. And then we have the Incredible Johnsons at 10 p.m. here on the stage.
All right. So that is coming up tonight here at Five Star Dive Bar, 526 South Main Street in Elkhart. A lot of baseball stuff that I wanted to touch on, or a number of different things anyway. I wanted to start with this. A former teammate of yours, Jeff Samardzija, and Madison Bumgarner made a little bit of news this week. Feisty pitchers, right? They're both less than thrilled about baseball's latest strategic fad.
I didn't even know about this.
You didn't?
No.
You didn't know about which?
This fad.
About them
this
or
thing.
This fad? You didn't know about
no.
this? Well, did you watch any baseball last year?
What in the world is going on?
I'm surprised that, like, the Cubs didn't do more of this because they're so into analytics and everything. But really, every team. Okay, so the opener is when you essentially take a relief pitcher and he starts a game instead of working at the back of the bullpen. He pitches an inning at the start of the game. Then you put your starter in, and ideally, your starter, just like he regularly would, gives you 5 to 6 innings. And then what it essentially does is you try to shorten the game for the bullpen at the back. And I think it was it San Francisco or was it, I think it was Tampa Bay. Yeah, it was Tampa Bay that did it a few different times last year, and some other teams did it. Craig Counsell did it in the playoffs with the Milwaukee Brewers. His starter didn't even go a full inning, though. I think he pitched to one batter, and that was it. And then he comes out and gets him. So both Samardzija and Bumgarner, the San Francisco Giants pitchers, not thrilled about this concept. So Samardzija told a San Francisco newspaper that pitchers who accept the opener concept are like wimpy sheep.
Could we pull up Jeff's contract? I got to think that these starting pitchers are upset because they may have bonus structure based on
number of starts. That's a good
innings pitched, those things. I don't think this is going away.
I don't think it is either.
I think it's going to become more common. I think we're going to see more teams maybe buy into an approach where you may see, built in, they're going to throw the same three guys every night. You know, okay, we are on a schedule.
Yeah.
Instead of it being, hey, the starter, he might do well tonight or he might not. It's going to be, we're going with these three guys to open the game, and then whoever our long relief, or if we want to call him a starter at that point, he's going to go 3 to 4, and then we have a closer.
Yeah, I could easily see that. And especially, now, I mean, we're talking about, we sat here last week and we talked about the proposal about if you bring in a relief pitcher, he's got to face a minimum of three batters, and I could see that contributing to that.
From a development standpoint, and we could say player health and performance, if you can predetermine when guys are throwing, put them on a schedule, you could even put them on a pitch count.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to be able to control that factor a lot more. So I think that I definitely don't think it's going away. I wonder how many teams are actually going to buy into it.
Well, and Madison Bumgarner, the Giants ace, he sent Bruce Bochy, their manager, a text saying that if you use an opener in my game, I'm walking right out of the ballpark. And, I mean, so we're talking about two different kinds of guys here, because Bumgarner is, what, like 30, 31. Samardzija is already up there at 34 years old, which is amazing to believe that he's already, you know, at that point of his career. But for a guy like Samardzija, and I didn't think about what you were talking about with contracts and bonuses and things like that, but really, when you think about it, you're going to use this thing if you are lacking quality starting pitchers. Mm-hmm. It's probably going to be your fourth or fifth starter. So for Bumgarner, you probably wouldn't use it because he's an ace. For that kind of guy, you're probably not going to do it. For a guy like Samardzija, where he is in his career, he only made 10 starts last year because of injuries. I mean, you're more apt to use it in that situation where it's a guy where it's a little bit more questionable about what you're going to get for him, because, again, the theory is to extend his start to get you deeper into the game.
Yeah, it's a pitch by committee. And the other thing, too, from an offensive standpoint that makes it a little more challenging is if you're not seeing, you know, the same guy for multiple innings, it changes your approach on how you attack the starting pitcher. You know, if you know you're going to get a guy for 7 to 8 innings, even if he's, a legitimate stud, you hope by the third at-bat, you're like, okay, I've seen his slider, I've seen his two-seam and his four-seam fastball, I know he's got a changeup and he's probably going to throw it in this situation. You can start to guess and sit on pitches. Well, if you're now, you know, you have three different guys within the first three innings, then maybe you get a guy who's going 3 or 4. It makes it a whole lot more difficult as far as a game plan is concerned to execute, you know, in the batter's box, too.
Yeah. Do you think that that analytics has officially gone too far at this point? Do you think it's taking away from anything?
I think your purists will say that, but if you look at the game of basketball, I think that there's a lot to be said on what's happening there and usage rates and being able to move the ball and just the freedom of play within the NBA. And now you look at what's happening within baseball as far as pitching is concerned, certain changes and moves, the shift as far as a defensive approach. If you look at all the numbers relating to hitters as far as launch angle, attack angle, getting the ball in the air, Doubles and home runs. I mean, there was only one guy last year in the whole MLB who had a negative attack angle to the ball, and that was Eric Hosmer.
Really?
Every other guy was swinging slightly up through the baseball, which isn't a new concept, but now that there's data and there's numbers behind it, I think that teams are taking a closer look at what they're doing. I don't think it's ruining baseball. I think there's still a balance between having that information and then making, some calls, whether you call those gut calls from a manager's standpoint. But I like it. If you're not changing, you're not updating, I think you're going to get left behind.
So let me ask you this then, because we're sitting here, pitchers and catchers have been reporting this week, spring training is underway, but we've still got a glut of guys, not just the guys at the top like Manny Machado and Bryce Harper, and we'll talk about them more specifically here in a minute, but you've got Dallas Keuchel, Adam Jones, Mike Moustakas. You can go on and on and on. A lot of guys who are still unsigned, and most of them, with the exception of Harper and Machado, who are kind of their own thing, they're 26 years old, but the rest of these guys are right in that 30 to 33-year-old range, and they're unable to find homes right now. So how much, when we look at analytics, you can talk about collusion and owners and ownership not wanting to go out and sign these guys, and you can talk about analytics. How much of the analytics do you think is affecting this stagnant market the last 2 years, really?
I think GMs and owners are getting smarter with these analytics and saying, if we're going to pay a guy X amount of dollars, we want to make sure he's producing for the entirety of his contract. Mm-hmm. The Machado and Harper is still surprising because you would say they are still going to be in their prime here for the foreseeable future, even though they're trying to get a max contract of 8 to 10 years. Now, if you look 8 to 10 years out, they're going to be towards the bottom end of their production level. So whether teams look to maybe front load their contract as far as compensation is concerned, I think the trend is going to be, you're going to see shorter contracts. I think you're going to see maybe a 2-year, 3-year contract. You're not going to see as many max contracts for guys. And really, unless the minor league contract system is changed, I think that the trend now within Major League Baseball is going to be shorter ones. So, within minor league baseball, when you sign out of high school or college, it's a 6-year contract. So you're tied into those terms for 6 years. Mm-hmm. So let's say you're drafted out of – even if you're drafted out of high school, let's say you're 18, that puts you at 24. So your best bet then, and who are those guys? Those are the rare individuals. Those are the ones that are really good who make, a meteoric rise where, they're at 24 and now they're asking for 10 years. Now, if you're a guy who maybe gets drafted out of, let's say you get drafted out of college, or you're a guy who, expends those 6 years, and then it takes you a couple more years to get to the big leagues, now you're 28, 29 years old. No one's going to give you a max contract then, and I think it's going to happen less and less now. But if you're drafted out of college and it takes you 6 years, or that 6-year contract expires, now you're 28. Once again, you're in that window where you're not going to get 8-10 years. So I think what you're going to see, unless the minor league structure is changed as far as contract terms are considered, you're not going to get – I don't think you're going to get as many long-term big money deals. You're going to get shorter contracts.
So what would you cut it back to? 4 years? 5 years?
For minor league baseball? Yeah. I would say 3 to 4 years I think is fair. And most systems have a pretty good idea within 3 or 4 years, even if you're a high school player too. This is going to be a guy he's going to be with our organization for a long time. Now, there are teams who have been able and organizations who have been able to capitalize on this. And I think, the most publicized one have been the Oakland A's and saying, we're going to try to move these guys up to the big leagues as soon as possible. So if we move them up within 3 years, then we still have 3 years of them making league minimum before maybe they jump ship and go get paid by the Yankees or the Boston Red Sox.
Right. And there's got to be a trade-off somewhere, because it's the second year in a row where we've seen this exact same thing happen. And I get, Scott Boras plays a big part in it, the agent of these guys, because he's always pushing for that longer, mm-hmm. as big a contract as you can get. And I think you're right. You're not going to see it. What surprises me is that with both Machado and Harper, they're both the exact same age, 26. They're both proven. I think everyone thinks about that 10-year Albert Pujols contract, but he was already older, four years older than these guys when he signed
still,
that deal.
No one's going to want to say, what are you doing when you're 36? I just don't see it. Not from a position player. Probably any position.
What I don't get is why these contracts tend to be so backloaded to begin with. Because you talked about front-loading them, and I think that seems like an easy solution. Give them more of the money up front more confident they're going
to
produce.
First 4 to 5 years, and then if their number per year goes down, let's say years 5 through 10, mm-hmm. you at least, it's more of an attractive offer if you're going to trade him or you're going to get rid of him, because you're not saying we're paying him, millions and millions of dollars. It's going to be more manageable for maybe a team that wants to take a chance on a guy who's now 32 or 33.
Now, since we're on this subject, Jacob DeGrom, the Mets pitcher who won the Cy Young, some interesting comments, and I just saw this on MLB Network this morning. His agent essentially said that if teams are going to grind down every stat in negotiations, why shouldn't players do everything to protect themselves, i.e., skip a start, sit out a day, whatever it happens to be. What do you think of that?
I get it. It makes sense. The term that we hear a lot is usage. I think we're getting closer and closer to – so you play 162 games. If you look at the NBA, you're playing, 70 or 80 games. It takes a toll on your body. I think we're getting closer and closer to – the hard part is you probably have to negotiate it within the terms, and I think that's what DeGrom and his agent are talking about is if it can be set up that way. But how do you minimize your usage within a year so that you can extend your life as an athlete, maybe without turning some heads as far as, I'm a fan, I'm showing up here to watch this person play, and he's not playing.
But it happens in the NBA all the time, right?
It does, and I think it's going to be it's going to become the norm. I mean, we can look in college football, sitting out bowl games. Mm-hmm. I think you're going to start to see more guys sit out regular season games too. I think that's where we're trending right now, as far as athletes are understanding. They are a commodity, but they're also looking at the type of their brand too. They want to be able to walk, talk, and perform when they're, in their early 30s, and they want their performance. They don't want to have that big fall off within performance. So how can you expand that? Because most, if you look at, athletic performance, you play in middle school, you play in high school, those that are able to play in college, and then your pro life. I mean, that's a pretty small window. So mm-hmm. the guys that are making it to the pro level, how can then I extend that a little bit longer so I'm not out of a job when I'm 28 years old?
He's Evan Sharpley, Sean Stiers. We're live at Five Star Dive Bar downtown Elkhart. Sean and Sharpley, Leprechaun Lunch at 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Okay, so I've been talking about Harper and Machado. Best case now, because, again, we're getting in. Guys have been reporting for over a week now, and they are still unsigned. Best guess, where do you think those guys are going to end up?
Local post 405 in American Legion ball.
Might have to at this point. Going to be playing for the St. Paul Saints.
I don't know. I mean, there's been so much speculation, and I think it's, every week you hear a different team. I don't know. There's going to have to be some give and take on both sides on where they meet on this. And I don't know if that means number of years decrease, pay goes up. I don't know. But we're getting close here.
Well, I know. I mean, we're not just close. We're right on top of it at this point. And supposedly the White Sox and the Padres are the two teams on Machado right now. And
I saw a post. They showed Machado's gloves for the upcoming season.
White Sox colors.
Yeah, very White Sox-esque on that.
And, I mean, if you're the Padres, you've already dumped a ton of money into Eric Hosmer that is going to end up being a really bad investment. I'm sorry, because he's not a classic first baseman.
He also has a negative launch angle.
There you go. And, I mean, he's not a home run hitter, and he should be, though. Park anyway. Yeah, I know. But
yeah, the park doesn't help.
But so they've already locked into that. And so if you go in on Machado – And they both got these long, 8 to 10 year contracts. What are you going to be able to put around? They're going to be trying to trade both of them here in 3 years.
I think Chicago, I think, could make a play though. I think they could.
It seems like both of these guys are going to have to settle for something they don't want to settle for.
I think so.
Because again, if you're looking at the Chicago teams, obviously the Cubs are the more attractive. There's more popularity. Mm-hmm. And it's not a shot at anybody who likes the White Sox, but it's just there's a different perception. It's just like the Yankees compared to the Mets, or even the Giants compared to the A's, you know, or the Dodgers to the Angels. There's just a difference with those organizations within that city, and I realize the White Sox are throwing up all that money, but I just think that if Manny Machado really wanted to be with the White Sox, he already would have signed that contract, because that offer apparently has been out there for a while.
Yeah, I mean, I would think he's probably waiting, but money talks.
So. Yeah, and I mean, with Harper, I don't know. Apparently, he doesn't want to go to Philadelphia. I have no. It's looking more and more like he could just end up.
He stay
back in Washington on a short contract,
right?
And then go through the whole thing again next year.
Awesome. Great.
And I mean, like Mike Moustakas, obviously is not nearly as big a deal as either one of these guys, but he was coming off a 36 home run, 100 plus RBI year 2 years ago. No one signed him because, again, he's a Boris guy, so he ends up back in Kansas City on a 1 year deal, gets traded to the Brewers, goes through a pennant run, gets to the playoffs with him, and now here he is in the exact same situation again a year later.
That's why players want long contracts.
I guess so. That's got to be it. Okay, we'll take another timeout when we come back. Kyler Murray made his decision this week that he's going to focus on football, a two-sport guy.
Speaking of more money.
Yeah, that's right. And Evan, of course, a former two-sport guy at Notre Dame, will get his thoughts on Kyler Murray, who declared that he wants to play in the NFL instead of professional baseball. So we'll do that and more when we return at Five Star Dive Bar on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. John is sharply winding things down at Five Star Dive Bar in downtown Elkhart, 526 South Main Street in the former State Theater. Stop on by a grilled cheese, Philly cheesesteak, a Philly cheesesteak grilled cheese and fries. Just $7 is the lunch special.
It's in my belly right now.
That's right. I can hear it in your belly right now. All right, we've got a few minutes left here. I'm going to ask you about Kyler Murray in a minute. We should mention college baseball. This is college baseball's opening weekend. You never know it, of course, by looking around here in this area, but Notre Dame heading south as they always do, and they're at Arizona State this weekend for a three-game series. The Sun Devils, led by former Indiana head coach Tracy Smith, who guided the Hoosiers to the College World Series with Kyle Schwarber in tow a few years back, and so that's an interesting matchup.
Is Arizona, is that a new landing place? We always were in Florida and then San Antonio.
Seems like a lot more are going down, and Notre Dame will be in San Antonio. If it's not next weekend, it's the weekend after that. They play their first 18 games away from, X Stadium. It seems like a lot more are going out to Arizona with some of these new spring training facilities and complexes. They're hosting some different early season events like Vanderbilt and Virginia, who played each other in the College World Series finals 2 years in a row a few years back. They're opening up the season tonight. Their game's actually going to be on MLB Network at 7 o'clock tonight. Yeah, so that's kind of cool. Yeah, so I think to answer your question, like I think a lot more college teams are heading to Arizona at this time of year to open their season. I mean, you've been there, right? Did you ever go to get into Arizona for any of those games?
Not when I was in college.
Okay.
I mean, our spring training site when I was with the Mariners.
Seattle.
We were in Peoria. So we spent a lot of time there in that area. But when I was at Notre Dame in college, our two spots that we would go to over spring break, we would go to Clearwater and we'd play at the Phillies spring training site.
Right.
And then we'd usually spend a week in San Antonio, you know, playing against.
Was that still when the Big East Big Ten Challenge was going on when you went to Clearwater?
Yes.
For some of those games?
Yeah. Usually early on. And then when we would go to San Antonio, we'd play a little bit more of a mix. Normally some teams and some smaller schools from the Texas area.
And Notre Dame obviously is not in the Big East anymore, so it doesn't matter. But they are a team from the north. And I like that. I liked it when they were doing that Big East Big Ten Challenge back then, because you had teams, predominantly teams that were all from the north, who were just getting outside for the first time, able to play against each other for three games to get their season
started.
And
we would usually do then some type of Big Ten matchup later in the year, too. We played Northwestern at the Cell in Chicago, which is no longer that, but we played there. We played Michigan at Fifth Third Park one time as well. I've got a fun story there where Dave Schrag pulled me after making an error. At least I thought I was pulled, and went into the corridor and we'll just say broke a couple of objects to find out when the assistant coach came in and told me I was up, that I was actually at bat at the time.
So first you were told you were pulled.
So I was, yeah, I was told I was pulled. So of course I wasn't real happy because I wasn't the only one that had made an error that inning. So I thought I was benched. So I go out. I mean, I was close to just, all right, I'm just going to go up and hang out in the clubhouse till this game's over. Uh-huh. Is how upset I was. The assistant coach comes in and he's like, yeah, you're up. So I walk out, put my helmet on, grab my bat, go up there, and hit a 3-run home run.
Nice. And who was this against?
This was against Michigan.
Oh, in the fifth third up there in Grand Rapids in that game? Okay.
And I inadvertently, purposefully forgot to shake Coach Schrag's hand rounding third base.
Oh, Evan. But the strange inconsistency of Dave Schrag.
Yeah.
I know there are a lot of those kind of stories going on. All right. Kyler Murray announced this week that he's going to focus on becoming an NFL quarterback rather than play baseball. You think it's a good decision?
Money talks, baby.
Yeah.
You know, and I saw. Well, we talked about Jeff Samardzija earlier. You know, when he was drafted out of Notre Dame, the structure within Major League Baseball contracts was different. So, you know, he was a later round draft pick compared to Kyler Murray, but got first round money. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think he got over $10 million signing bonus. So, you know,
to keep him away from football,
yeah, and it was put in the contract. Then, hey, you're not going to go play football. You know how it's structured now is very different. So there's more guaranteed money if you get drafted in the first round in the NFL. So I think that has to do with it. You know, the other side of it too is, and we touched on this a little bit earlier, you know, it's a 6-year contract in minor league baseball where you still are only making league minimum if you make it up. And we use the A's an example. They're notorious for doing that.
Yeah.
So I think that has to play into it. You know, another interesting point is, you know, Kyler Murray played baseball and football at Oklahoma. I'm sure that the red carpet was rolled out on both those sports. You mean to tell me that he's going to say, yeah, I might just be in the minor leagues taking 10-hour bus rides for 4 hours, you know, getting $1,000 or less a month playing in A-ball or double-A? Because that's what it is. He might have a nice little $4-5 million signing bonus that he got, you know, for being a first-round draft pick. But he's getting paid the same as a 50th-round draft pick like I was per month. So it's not as glamorous as people make it out to be.
What if it doesn't work? What if football doesn't work out? Say you give it, 4 years? Is that a feasible time
fair.
Period? Do you think baseball is still a possibility if he wants to try to go back to it?
Yeah, but you can hold a clipboard and make a whole lot of money in the NFL.
Yeah, that's true too. But as an undersized, because that's the thing that's going to be, can he hold on with that size? That's obviously the biggest question about him. It was the biggest question with Baker Mayfield last year, too. He at least showed after Hugh Jackson was fired that he could play in the NFL. They could have a successful offense. They've got to keep that going. But with the way football changed, it seems like maybe it's a better decision now than it would have been even 5 years ago.
Yeah, I think more teams are open to that, and you have to build it around what he's done. So, you know, whatever team or program decides to take a shot at him being a quarterback, it's going to be, let's try to build this into a similar format of what he did at Oklahoma and how he had success there.
So with Murray announcing that he's going to the NFL, that means Oakland is going to lose, the A's are going to lose their first-round draft pick from last year because he had signed the signing bonus. He's going to have to give most of it back, and they're going to get no draft compensation. Do you think baseball should give a compensatory pick?
Nope, they're 50 rounds. I mean, it happens with high school players all the time. You know, you take a shot. You knew that going into that was a possibility. I don't know, pay him more money or put it in his contract that he can't play. They let him go back and play football.
But part of that now, I guess, to look at it from the A's standpoint, is Kyler Murray was nowhere near what he turned out to be when the A's drafted him.
That's
true. He was still an off-the-radar guy that most people didn't know about. He wasn't even a top 200 prospect, let alone 100 prospect, but they did sign him draft him in the first round for whatever reason. So that's the way I look at it, is like, if you're going to take that chance of a guy who's playing another sport and who could leverage that sport, then I think that if you're going to get compensation, it should be based on what he was rated, sure. Not where you drafted him.
I agree. I would agree with that.
Because, you know, again, as you just mentioned, Billy Beane and the Oakland A's are really notorious for overdrafting guys for that very reason. We're going to overdraft you, but we're going to pay you more, but you're going to have to sign the contract and do what we want. And now he had a change of heart because he went out and won a Heisman Trophy.
Good for
all right.
Him.
All right. We got about 20 seconds to go. So thanks to Jason and everybody, as always, here at Five Star Dive Bar, downtown Elkhart. Stop by for lunch any day of the week. They've always got lunch specials. And they've also always got a comedian on Friday and musical acts Friday and Saturdays as well.
Mm-hmm. Always a lot to do.
All right. For Evan Sharpley here, for Garrett Kazer back in the studio, Sean Stiers, WSBT South Bend.